ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Backtracking to the name Narayana. One meaning of Narayana is that he resides in everything that he creates. Another meaning is that all beings rest in him. So, what do you think of that? He's in everything and everything is in him. Logical impossibility. All glories to Lord Sri Hari, in which all logical apparent impossibilities are resolved because he can do anything. Once someone asked Srila Prabhupada that could Krishna create a rock so heavy that he couldn't lift it? So it's a trick question. Because if you say yes, or if you say no, it appears that in some, either way, God would seem to be incapable. So Srila Prabhupada said, yes, he can create such a rock that is so heavy he can't lift it, and then he would lift it. And the person said that, well, if it's so heavy that he can't lift it, then how could he lift it? And Srila Prabhupada replied, because his potency is always expanding. And then he'd dump it on your head, you rascal. Prabhupada didn't say that. That was my, at least it's not recorded that he said that. That's my added commentary. So, name 248 in Sri Vishnu Sahasranam. How many names does Vishnu have? Vishnu Sahasranam. 1,000, according. Well, look, one of this name 248 is Asankhya, which means innumerable. So, when we speak of Vishnu Sahasranam, we're talking about 1,000 names of Vishnu, not exactly the 1,000 names. Sometimes it said the 1,000. Because they're prominent, they're grouped together like this, but innumerable names, forms, avatars in Bhagavatam, Vedvyas states, avataram hi asankhya, the same word is used. He has uncountable names, forms, qualities. Now, whenever the definition of Bhagawan, the Supreme Lord, comes up, that is given in Sri Vishnu Purana, Aishvaryasya Samagrasya Viryasya Yashasya Shriya Gyana Vairagya Yoschaiva Shandang Bhaga Itingana. In the Vishnu Purana it stated that there are 6 qualities which Bhagavan possesses in full, and whoever possesses these qualities in full, he only can be considered to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if there are 6 qualities, then how come there are unlimited qualities, unlimited number of qualities? The answer is that these are 6 prominent qualities. Certainly, one who is the Supreme Lord must possess these 6 qualities in full. But these are 6 by which we can identify him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Doesn't mean that they're the only qualities. Or it could be said that all other qualities, they are subsumed in these six. Although the quality of mercy is not mentioned there, that's, you could say that's part of his general opulence or part of his beauty, not only his, the beauty of his form, but also the beauty of his personality. And there are many qualities, such as are described here in Sri Vishnu Sahasranam. One of the qualities, one of the names is Kritagya, which means who is grateful. One of the names just given is, what is that? Satkrita. No, Satkarta. Satkrita is one of the names, but Satkarta means one who offers respect to the respectable, to the good people. So, these are all qualities of the Supreme Lord. They are innumerable. How many names does he have? More names than we can imagine. If you think of a big number, actually we can only think in limited numbers, isn't it? Because it becomes difficult for us to, how do we think of numbers? We tend to think of numbers in terms of figures, although the figures are not the numbers, actually. They only represent the numbers. And what is a number anyway? It's only, there's no real thing as a number. You can't buy a kilo of numbers. A number is a mental construct which describes certain attributes of a group of objects or a group of ideas or whatever. So, if we think of a big number, a million, we can think in terms of seven digits. A billion, we can think of in terms of 10 digits, or a British billion is 13 digits. And an American billion is 10 digits. But I think nowadays it's all the same because of internationalization. Then a trillion, what's a trillion? Must be 13 digits. And then quadrillion, becomes difficult even to think of it in the mind. The persons who are used to dealing with big numbers, they may be more used to it. But once you get up into beyond 8 or 9 digits, usually you don't put the digits anymore, especially if it's a number which is billion, trillion, quadrillion. What would the next be? Pentillion? If the number is ends in any digit other than zero, then it becomes a little difficult. But even then, the point I'm making is that you put with the power two, rather than writing out so many figures, you put something to the power two. And even some figure, maybe like 10.734165 raised to the power of 23 or 7. Rather than, it becomes easier for us to conceptualize. We find in Vedic mathematics that there are terms for very large numbers which don't exist in English language. Terms like Arbud, Padma. So these are used in Vedic astronomy, which suggests that Vedic astronomers were comfortable in discussing and conceptualizing very large numbers, which we raised in the West. We don't have that. For instance, it's described that Hanuman, in Ramayana, it's described that, was it Hanuman? No, maybe Sugriva. He went looking for Sita, he jumped over, he traveled through different parts of the universe, and it describes the great distances that he was traveling. So, even without going huge distances or measuring huge distances, we can still have huge numbers. Instead of looking in the macrosphere, if we look in the microsphere, then how many nanoseconds in a year? Anyone? It becomes a big number. If you go the other way, you also get big numbers, but very big little numbers. Very, very, very little. So Krishna, if you look, if you go into the atom and go further and further and further and further in, will you find Krishna? No, he's there, but you won't find him. And if you expand your telescope so that you can see more and more and more, will you find Mahavishnu or Garbhadakshaya Vishnu? No, you won't find him. That actually comes up in the next name. So, Ananta Shesha has how many mouths? Sometimes said 1,000. But Ananta, unlimited number, with an unlimited number of mouths from an unlimited time, he has been glorifying the qualities of the Supreme Lord. Still, he doesn't come to the end. Therefore, that's another reason why he's called Ananta. So, Asankhya means innumerable. The equivalent of modern scientific and mathematical inquiry in Vedic culture is Sankhya, which means the process of numerizing or enumerating. But we can't find Krishna by that method. We can discover various things about the material world, but we can't find Krishna. Krishna is not available to the mundane process of trying to understand. He's not only beyond material enumeration, he's beyond material conception. So, that comes up in the next name. One verse from Bhagavad Gita, which corroborates the name Asankhya, uncountable. Aneka bahudara, aneka bahudara vaktra netram pashyami twam sarvato nanta rupam nantang namadhyam punastavadim pashyami vishveshvara vishvarupa. Arjuna says to Krishna, O Lord of the universe, I see you with aneka, not one, bahudara, many, numberless, ananta, unending, numberless arms, stomachs, mouths and eyes, of boundless forms on every side, and I do not see the end or the middle or the beginning. So the next name is Aprameyatma, which means that he is a spiritual being, Atma, who cannot be, well, there are different meanings. A spiritual being who cannot be measured and who is not known through pramana. Pramana means various forms of evidence. Now, the previous name, Asankhya, means that innumerable. But even if we were to consider even one of the innumerable qualities of Krishna, then still we could not understand even one of them. Because not only are his attributes innumerable, but they're also immeasurable and inconceivable. So, this name, Apramayatma, that goes very well with the term Achintya, inconceivable. Then we may say, well, what are we talking all these things for then? Why are we discussing all these things if it's not understandable? Well, it is understandable to the extent that he blesses us to understand him. It's not that he's totally non-understandable, but the whole process of understanding him is quite different to that which we normally consider how to understand anything. If we study or we're trained in various disciplines, we may, such as engineering or medicine or how to play poker, or there are so many different things we can learn, and we get some understanding of it by the grace of Krishna. We can get some understanding of how to change a car tire. That's a relatively simple thing. Just recently in London, I was surprised. A devotee had a flat tire and he called the AA, the Automobile Association, to change a tire. Usually I thought people do it themselves. How to cook a chapati. If you don't know how to cook chapatis, you won't be able to do it. You have to be shown how to do it. You can't learn it from a book. It's a great art, but it's masterable. So the process of knowing something in this material world, you can become a master of that. Just like we hear they said, a yoga master. Last time I was here, you made a poster advertising myself as a bhakti yoga master. But we don't usually use that term in relation to bhakti yoga. We may say Swami, Goswami, master of the senses. But the whole approach in bhakti yoga is so different that it's not that we master a process and then we become perfect in it. It's whereas in hatha yoga, then one can practice doing asanas, and one can master that. One can get control over one's body to such an extent that one can regulate what the organs do. In other words, instead of just when we put something into our stomach and then all the pancreatic juices and whatever, they come in and they start digesting it. But a consummate yogi can control what all the glands and organs of his body are doing. So, one can perform very intricate, complex yoga posture, so one may be called a yoga master. But in bhakti yoga, you could use that term, but the whole conception of bhakti yoga is quite different. That one is not that you master the process and then you become perfect in it, but the process is to always pray for mercy. So these the process to always pray for mercy, knowing oneself to be fully dependent on Krishna, and not that when you achieve a certain level of proficiency, then that's it. Now you're there, you made it. It's not like that. Knowing that Krishna is unlimited, he is infinite, infinite, and as Srila Prabhupada pronounced, and we, the jivas, are infinitesimal. That's how Srila Prabhupada pronounced it, infinitesimal. So knowing that there will always be an insurmountable gap between us and He that we cannot surmount, He, by His mercy, can extend Himself to us. Not that we shall bring Him under control. There's that picture, a famous picture of Christian picture of God stretching out his hand toward Adam. Of course, Adam has to put his hand up also. So, of course, in the higher levels of bhakti, one can actually, the concept of controlling Krishna arises. Krishna comes under the control of his devotees. But he comes under the control of devotees not because of their proficiency in any technique and not because they intrinsically desire to do so, but due to the great power of their love, because he is kritagya, because he is grateful, he gives himself to his devotee. Otherwise, from the perspective of tattva gyan, philosophical insights, or from the consideration of him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is immeasurable, prameya. This word also means limited, small, insignificant. So Krishna is not limited or small or insignificant. Prameya also means provable. So there's no method to prove the existence of God by any material means. This is a very important point which Sri Ramanujacharya establishes, that there's no method that you can prove the existence of God. We can make some arguments based on logic which strongly indicate his existence. For instance, if we see a book, any book, such as the Bible, or The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins, we could postulate that this book came into being by chance, that all the pages all fell into place and all the ink fell into place with perfectly proofread, with punctuation, and ideas were lucidly set forth, even though the ideas in the God Delusion are stupid ideas, but they're lucidly set forth. And all the binding was nicely done, and the cover was looks as if it's designed, but it's not really designed, it just came into being by chance. And it ended up in a bookshop, and the bookshop people told me that you have to pay £14.99, or whatever it is, to buy this book. And I could say, well, can you prove that you actually made this book and it didn't come into being by chance? And they would think that's an absurd question, which it is. So if to postulate that even a book comes into being by chance sounds pretty stupid, actually, then to postulate that the whole universe has come into being by interaction of random forces is, considering that the whole universe is unlimitedly more complex and greater than a book, it's unlimitedly stupid to postulate, even if you're an Oxford professor, that the whole universe came into being by interaction of random forces. And as Srila Prabhupada would say, even if you say it came into being by random forces, where did the random forces come from? So it is logical, in one sense, to it makes a lot more sense to suggest that there is a person behind the whole universe. But it's not ultimately provable. And even if we logically accept that there is a supreme controller, which is good logic, not bad logic. Who is he? What does he look like? What does he eat for breakfast? How does he dress? Who is his girlfriend? Does he even have a girlfriend? We can't understand these points by logical analysis. Just like we can presume, living here in the United Kingdom, this is not part of the Republic of Ireland, for those of you who may have been wishing otherwise, here in the United Kingdom, we can presume that there is a leader of the nation. There's some leader somewhere. We don't see him or her or it or what, but we presume that there is. And actually there is, right? There's a prime minister by the name of Mr. David Cameron. Can you prove it? Can any of you prove to me that even a person called David Cameron exists? Prove it. Show him to me. Don't just sit there. Show me David Cameron. Otherwise, why should I believe that such a person exists? Well, I guess you could go and see him and this and that. And then if you go and see him, not that easy, not impossible, not very easy at all. You might catch him coming out of the House of Parliament sometime, catch a glimpse of him. But okay, if we can logically accept that there is a leader of this country, what does he look like? You can't deduce that by logic. What does he like to eat for breakfast? Better not think about it here in this temple, where we don't offer, whatever he eats for breakfast, we can be pretty sure we wouldn't want to offer Radha Govinda or any of their devotees for breakfast. But that he does eat some breakfast, what does he eat? What kind of music, if any, does he like to listen to? Who's his girlfriend? Well, that would be a hot topic. If he had one. Who's his wife? You can't understand this by logic. By logic, we can't prove it, but we can. Actually, by logic, you can't really prove anything, but the existence of God is not provable. And over and above that, even though we can, to a large extent, accept that there should be a supreme controller, the nature of his personality is not understandable simply by logic, because personality means personal. He has his personal preferences. Someone, just like one, even among pure devotees, one pure devotee may prefer rasgullas to sandesh, and another may prefer sandesh to rasgullas. And even the person who likes rasgullas, after some time he might think, well, actually, I used to like rasgullas better, but now I like sandesh better. So, personality is beyond logic. Now, another meaning of aprameyatma. Prameya means that which is proved. It's a very important word. There are two important words. One commonly used word is pramana, which means evidence. And in Vedic discourse, pramana means shastra pramana, the evidence from shastra. Among which the highest is Shruti Pramana. Among all the Shastras, the Shruti or the Vedas, they're considered the highest, and others Smriti. Well, the Vedic corpus is broadly divided into two divisions, Shruti and Smriti. Shruti, that which is directly the Vedas, eternally existing, unchangeable, and Smriti, which is also part of the Vedas, but is transmitted through human beings, not ordinary human beings, and which is authoritative but doesn't have the same... If there's some apparent contradiction between Shruti Pramana and Smriti Pramana, then Shruti is accepted as the highest. So, Prameya, what is Prameya? Prameya is that which is to be proved. There's proof and that which is to be proved. So, Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan, Gaurya Vedanta Acharya, who also made a commentary on this Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, he also compiled a short work called Prameya Ratnavali, in which he lists the 9 points which are to be proved. First of all, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he rephrased that. So, first of all, what is pramana? What do we accept as evidence? Amnaya praha tattvam. The shastra, which is received through Vedic, received through parampara system of perfect devotees, that is praman. And what does it speak of? What is harir eva eha paramam? Hari, Krishna, is supreme. So that's the first prameya. That is the point to be proved. So the shastras, they give various proofs of this. And there are others. Sarva Shaktim, Rasabdhim. He possesses all potencies. He is an ocean of rasa. So, all these points about Krishna are to be understood through the Shastra, but is not simply by the Shastra that he is to be understood. Shastra is only meant for understanding Krishna. Vedaisya sarve rahameva vedyaha. Veda means knowledge. What is that knowledge? Is knowledge of Krishna. But it is not merely by investigating the Shastra that one can understand Krishna, or that one can ascertain, because then someone else may bring up some other section from Shastra, or they may interpret in a different way. So ultimately Krishna is to be experienced and loved. Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhaktau. Someone may examine all the Shastras day and night all their life and still not understand Krishna. But if we get association with a pure devotee, then a pure devotee can awaken us to Krishna consciousness. Bhaktiya sanjataya bhaktiya. Bhakti comes about by bhakti, and then what's that other verse? Bhaktis tu bhagavad bhakta sangena parijayate. Bhakti comes about by association with devotees, and bhaktya mam abhijanati, Krishna can be understood through devotion. So even though one may learn all the shastras, the key to understanding the shastra remains locked if we do not accept that Krishna is to be submitted to in devotional service. Then we can begin to understand what is actually in Shastra. Okay, so I'll finish there for now. Let's see if there's anything. Avang manasa gochara. Yeah. Simply by words, simply by mental speculation, we cannot understand Krishna. who is beyond our senses. People say, show me God. Well, if we show, if he's shown to us, do we have the ability to see him? Do we have the eyes? So this is similar to this name, actually already the term Aprameya has already come. So this is Aprameya Atma. So it's a very similar name. Another meaning of Prameya can mean patient. Sorry. Aprameya means patient, not disturbed. So an example of his patience is given by one of the commentators of Naranarayan Rishi. When they were attempted to be tempted by Kamadev, Cupid, they just remained calm. They did not become agitated. So it becomes similar to apramatta. The mind is completely peaceful. They didn't become agitated upon seeing the beauties produced by Kamadev, the beautiful women produced by Kamadev to agitate their minds. And they didn't become agitated with Kamadev either, as Lord Shiva did when Parvati attempted to, or actually Cupid attempted to agitate his mind, Lord Shiva. But he didn't become lusty, but he did become angry with Kamadev. And he burned him up. Burned his body up. With the fire, Lord Shiva burned him with the fire coming from his third eye. But he didn't kill Ananga. Cupid became Ananga, which means without a body. But you can't kill lust. So the personality of lust said, oh, very good. So now I can go everywhere and enter into everything. So now I've become more powerful. But Naranarayan, they were not disturbed in any way at the temptation of Kamadev. So in this way, because Krishna himself is the transcendental Cupid, we offer, we chant the Kama Gayatri, Kamadev. We worship that Kamadev who is Krishna, the divine personality of transcendental desire. So he's not at all agitated by any material desires. It's not at all possible. He remains calm and undisturbed in the midst of any situation which would totally agitate any person who is still influenced by any material desire. For one who has not attained to Krishna prema, he must be influenced by material desire, because desire is concomitant with consciousness, and desire is either to serve Krishna or to serve one's senses. Atendriya priti vancha tare balay kam Krishnendriya priti iccha dhare premana. So, Hare Krishna. Any question about this? Just by discussing all these points, we should hopefully, in our appreciation of Krishna should increase. How this unlimitedly great personality appears in this world as if a helpless young child, and is carried for his own safety to the other side of the Yamuna. So that festival of Janmashtami is upcoming, so we can mentally and spiritually prepare ourselves for that. What's your question?
Different sampradayas said Narayana as supreme, Krishna's the supreme and fountainhead of all incarnations. So in reference to the fact that it should all be based on pramanas, so coming from Shruti.
Everything is based on pramana coming from Shruti and Smriti, Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi. So how does one acharya think that Narayana is supreme and another thing that Krishna is supreme? Well, there you go, aprameya. Not simply, but at the lower level, one cannot understand the pramana of Shastra, the evidence of Shastra, due to material desire. Therefore, we find that there are persons who are very learned in the Vedas and who are convinced that the ultimate message of the Vedas is to be a materialist. Krishna refers to them in Bhagavad Gita as Vedavadarata. Persons who are interested in performing pious activities for elevation to the heavenly planets. And on the higher level, when one is free from material desires, one may, among pure devotees, there may be still differences in understanding due to desire, not due to material desire, due to spiritual desire, due to different inclinations. Some pure devotees are attracted to worship the Supreme Lord as Vaikunthanath, the Lord of Vaikuntha, Narayana, Lakshmipati, the husband and master of Lakshmi. And others, they worship him as Golokanath, the Lord of the Goloka world, who is Radhapati, the husband of Radha. So that's a matter of spiritual difference. There are differences even in the absolute, which sounds like a contradictory statement, because absolute means beyond all difference, but Krishna is so absolute that everything is possible in him. Beyond even a mundane conception of absoluteness. So if we think we can ascertain Krishna by logic or by any, or even by studying very deeply the Shastra, it's not possible. He makes himself, he reveals himself to those who he is satisfied with. So, anything else? No. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.